When you begin to think about these devices just living in our homes, in our living rooms and kitchens, but beginning to live in our mobile devices more presently, obviously Google Assistant already present, you know, kind of in 400 million devices around the world on Android and Google Home. But, you know, thinking about how these things show up in our headphones, how they show up in our cars, you know, mobility then suddenly changes the way in which we live with these things, because you get continuity from different places as you leave the house, going into the, being able to pick up not just the same podcast, but being able to, you know, say, oh, hang on a minute, like, do I have what I need in the fridge? Let me just ask my smart fridge to check for me. Then it can reroute me on my way home to pick up the right groceries, or just add it to my Whole Foods order and it'll come by Amazon Prime.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by special guest James Poulter, who is a really interesting individual that I cannot wait for you guys to hear from. We met in New York City a couple of months ago. We actually met online, maybe even up to a year ago on LinkedIn. One of the unique relationships that has come out of LinkedIn for me is I've been prioritizing that platform as a social network. And James works with Lego. He's partnered with YouVersion in the Church of England as an advisor and some really unique ministry work and business work. And so, James, welcome to the podcast. Would you be willing to share a little bit about your background and what it is you do?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it, just to speak into what you guys are doing. It's super exciting. So yeah, my background is basically, I've worked in social media in a mixture of different contexts for just over 10 years now. I originally started actually producing podcasts back in like 2007, 2008. I was too early, you could argue. And so started out doing that for a couple of different organizations in the UK, including one very famous rock club called Coco in Camden here in London, where I spent a lot of time being the only sober per 2 o'clock in the morning interviewing bands for podcasts. And basically I rolled on from there to work in a variety of different big advertising agencies, most notably Ogilvy for a couple of years, and then more recently Edelman, the global communications firm, leaving there to join the Lego Group 3 years ago as originally in their social media team, and now more recently as the head of emerging platforms at Lego, looking after things like voice technology, conversational AI, things like chatbots, like we launched our first Facebook Messenger chatbot, for example, last year, and our first Alexa and Google Home skills and actions. And so that's what I've been doing. And along the way, I've had a number of different roles, advising churches and ministries, including charities like Tear Fund, the church you mentioned. I sit on their digital advisory board, which is a group of industry professionals across the UK that advise the digital team there on strategy. And also I worked with the team at YouVersion as part of Life Church to originally bring YouVersion to the UK back in 2010. It's been an interesting ride along the way and seen an awful lot of change, but lots of exciting stuff on the horizon as well. So yeah, excited to discuss it all here.
Yeah. So I want to go back to YouVersion and I want to talk through even some of the most recent stuff you're doing with Church of England. But before that, I think one of the things that caught my attention is with Lego, I think everyone assumes that Lego is just plastic pieces that connect to each other. You saying that there's an Alexa device and that there is a messenger bot, what does that have to do with Lego as we might know it, or most might assume?
Yeah, sure. So we've launched a number of projects out of my team in the past year, which are trying to experiment with digital innovation for marketing, for content communications. And a couple of the things that we've started with is really looking at this whole area of conversational AI. So across different modes, that might be voice driven, things like Alexa, Google Home, but also in chat based interfaces, whether that's chat on the shop.lego.com site when you're trying to buy a Lego set, or if you're trying to do the same thing over in Facebook Messenger. So last year, we launched for Christmas a chatbot called Ralph in 5 countries in the US, the UK, France, Germany, and Poland. And what we really did with that was to try and give people a different way of navigating the 130 plus products that we release every 6 months. There's a lot of different choice out there when it comes to Lego, and we know that parents and shoppers really want that opportunity to navigate a fun way that they don't have to kind of pile through pages and pages of website or Amazon pages to kind of work out what they're going to buy. So that's been a really interesting test, and that was the first of those major initiatives that we did in that space, and has rolled on since this year. When it comes to voice platforms, however, I think that's most fascinating areas for us as we think about these. And I think all of this stuff will at some point or other, be social connected. Obviously, right now it's rather segmented in its own vertical. But I think, if you look long term, all of these things will become connected in some fashion. But the experiments we've done so far, we did a couple of flash briefings earlier in the year to give ourselves some understanding of how to build for the platform. And then we launched our first major skill in the US and the UK called Lego Duplo Stories, or Duplo, some mm-hmm. of you might know it as, which is our bigger bricks for smaller yep. kids. And that is Duplo Stories is 10 interactive story play along to whilst listening, and they have vehicle stories and animal stories, and they basically give parents this new way of starting play with their toddlers. Parents or adults, whoever they have in their lives, who want to kind of a game or a story going, they can fire up their smart speaker and start having that story kicked off, and then moments to interact, moments to build, moments to imagine along the way. And that's been really exciting. It's been one of those projects which is a real pleasure to work on, and the team did an amazing amount of work to get off the ground. The thing that you learn as you go along the way is that these things are always far more complex than you first assume they're going to be on the outset. And we've learned an awful lot about that, but it's brought a lot of amazing opportunities our way, and think that we've got a lot more to do in that space, as all brands do, as you begin to think about how do you bring to life any brand, whether that is a brand like Lego that's very recognizable through to a church or a personality or an individual or a group. In that voice space, which we talk about as this idea of being a zero pixel real estate environment, right? There's no visual to work with in most cases. Building a brand that can stand the test of time in a voice landscape is a really challenging thing to do when everything else you rely upon is so visual in most of the work that you and I both engage with day to day, and we have to learn so much along the way.
I think it's so interesting to hear you process that. I would love to talk to you about that for hours, and understanding how you've been able to integrate this into a company and into a brand that is so well known. My daughter, actually, we got a robot for Christmas for her, the Lego robot, and she is so into robotics now. Yeah. Out of that new media engagement, that she's in a robotics course today after school, that it's fueled this interest. And so it's neat how a historic brand that has done something that is seemingly timeless is innovating in such creative ways. And I think the church can learn from that. Of at the core, our mission isn't changing into the church, but new opportunities are now available with the way we engage. And I think there are some real organizational understandings that the church can gain from that. Let's backtrack a little bit about your learnings with YouVersion. And so the Bible, we have always consumed the Bible, or I say always, in the past 500 years or so, we've consumed it on paper. And now YouVersion has introduced the Bible in a new way. You were a big part of bringing YouVersion to the UK. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like, and maybe even help people understand what is the church like in the UK from a cultural perspective, from just a context? That where the UK is, most listeners are based in the US that listen to this podcast.
Whilst I think the gap has closed a lot in more recent years, I think certainly if you looked to the kind of earlier 2000s and the noughties, we usually looked at, particularly from a commercial perspective when I was working in the advertising industry, that the UK tended to be somewhere between 12 and 18 months behind the US in terms of technology adoption, and the same cycle that we all know of tech adoption, but there's a bit of a lag. And that's partly because most of the big companies, as we all know, have been launched in the Valley, in Silicon Valley, and launched primarily in the US first before then expanding usually to other English language markets, the UK being one obviously we invented it, so they tend to kind of come back to us with English, and before kind of moving into international geographies. And but that always created a slight lag, because you physically couldn't get your hands on or log into, you know, things like that. I remember in the early days of, you know, Facebook, when I was at one of the few universities in the UK at the time that it left the original college network in the US, that our university was one of the ones in the UK that managed to get it, but lots of my friends couldn't get on it because they were outside that network. So that has been the persisting way that things have moved. And as a result, then the church has been also slower to adopt, not only because the church is usually slower to adopt everything anyway, but has been slower to adopt it because of that that lag. I think a lot of the church has looked to the US as well, both for learnings, but also seen some of the pitfalls that came about early on, in terms of, you know, live streaming services, in terms of consuming the Bible on devices, before YouVersion and since. And we've taken a lot of cues there, but the cultural institution is very different. You know, we operate, as I mentioned, I advise the Church of England. We have a national church. We have, you know, the head of state is also the head of the church in the Queen. So there is an institutional, you know, form of Christianity. But culturally, Christianity is less present in the culture and in the you know, general conversation. And so because of that, whenever new technology comes into the church, there's these two interesting things that happen. One is, within inside the church circles, everyone goes, hang on a minute, is this of the church? Did we shut this down? And then on the outside of the Christian circles, the media instantly wants to jump on the church doing anything that looks remotely, you know, kind of trend-led, whether that's technology-based or anything else, quite frankly, because the novelty that the church would do anything with technology is just too much for kind of leave alone. So, you know, that's the difference, whereas I think in the US context, you just don't have that kind of separation between the, you know, kind of Christian lifestyle and everyone else's lifestyle. It's certainly, you know, in the Midwest and in the South, and maybe less so on the coasts, but that has, I think we have a clear cultural difference there. And then when you think about, you know, kind of the journey of bringing something like YouVersion into the UK, I originally connected with Bobby Grunwald and Terry Storch, who are the guys that obviously founded it out of the Life Church Ministry under Craig Rochelle. And when they first came to the UK, basically they were looking for someone to kind of help them advise kind of working in that. And I had some experience in those areas. So we began to work together on, you know, kind of bringing a marketing plan together and growing the platform here in the UK. And a lot of that was through partnership. And I think that has been the journey, both if you talk to those guys, I'm sure they would continue to air that. And certainly even on my own podcast, I had that with us last year, is that they've grown so much through partnership. And so it was crucial to get things like, simple things like getting the NIV in English, in the British English, onto the platform. Things like getting organizations and churches like Holy Trinity Brompton and the Alpha Course and the, you know, Bible in a throughout the year, those types of materials that were culturally relevant to the UK onto the platform as well. Because whilst there's been so much that has been brought from the US into UK Christian culture, there is still a very tightly knit and inevitably smaller Christian culture here in the UK that also has to be represented on those platforms. And I think doing that well was definitely part of their mission, and has been why it's been such a successful platform, not just here in the UK, but across the world as it's grown, because they've done that effort of growing that really depth of understanding of the different cultures that they're working in through the Open Digerati team that Terry has fostered there, which I think is just one of the biggest gifts, aside from the YouVersion app itself, to the church that they've been able to give, which is, it's just been a pleasure. And I will always cherish the fact that I had some very, very, very small part in that journey early on. It was very exciting.
That's awesome. What is it about, and Life Church is such a model for so many churches, that I think it's fascinating that and you're part of the Church of England that has, you know, I don't know how old it is, but I would guess over a century old history. Life Church has only existed for like 25 years. It is such a young church or organization that has shaping global impact, because they in many ways embraced media and embraced new technology. What, because you got to be so close to that experience and bringing that to the UK, What do you think church leaders and ministry leaders can learn from the innovation that was led out of Life Church with you?
Amazing things that you can do when you're a young church and a young organization, because you aren't carrying in the cultural baggage that perhaps other churches do. You know, the Church of England was founded in 15. We're building on 500 plus years now, or you're just under 500 years of cultural heritage, you know, from, you know, Henry VIII down to today. So, you know, with that comes an awful lot. Church law comes a lot of cultural understanding, and crucially quite a lot of cultural misunderstanding. And so doing things like you know, even the concept of things like live stream services, these things have taken not only a long time to come about just because of the technology, but also because of culturally the mission of the church in the UK. And I can only really speak of the Church of England for what I've been a part of since becoming a Christian in my late teens till now, and obviously now working more institutionally with the church, is that the mission of the Church of England is to have a local church in every community, and the idea of you know, and that you know, that community is true social action mixed with also local parish ministry. That is the mission. And so the idea that you step out of that and do that at a national level or an international level, in the way that places like Life Church or Elevation, Hillsong, you know, name the list of the other ones, is that actually that is somewhat countercultural to the idea of the local church. The Church of England in a corporate sense exists, but it only exists to facilitate the diocese across the country and then the local church in the parish to make sure that they can be effective. It's not to try and ladder up to this kind of broader vision. So when you bring in big sweeping change, like some of the initiatives that we've worked on in the past, just like our launch of the Alexa skill, the launch of you know, Common Prayer as an app, all of these sort of things, that actually, you know, is quite countercultural to what it means to be the Church of England in, you know, kind of air quotes, because we just don't do things like that, or we haven't done things like that. Yeah. But there's an understanding that actually that when you think about doing these things online, is that you can't, no individual parish church can do that time and time again, and also be thoroughly inefficient to do it that way. Yeah. And it does make sense actually that when you go to a digital context, that the Church of England in an aggregate can have a presence that you just wouldn't otherwise have if you were executing through local parish ministry. And that is going to take like, we're doing a long way to go before that becomes a common understanding and is embedded in the 18,000 plus churches across the country that are doing ministry week in.
It's so interesting to think about, and you mentioned three churches that I'd actually written down recently, that churches that have embraced new media of Hillsong, Elevation, and Life Church are three churches that didn't exist 50 years ago. Church of England existed 500 years ago. The assumption often is, and even in business, is the big, it's impossible for a small organization to come in and disrupt anything because the big organization will just stop them. They'll consume them. And even in ministry, Life Church didn't exist 30 years ago, and they are transforming the world with it, a new way that we're all consuming the Bible. Elevation. Yep. So Facebook didn't exist 15 years ago. It is a new day, a new opportunity, and these windows. It's really exciting, and so I think there's an exciting day for church plants and smaller churches. I would love for you to dig in a little bit with. We've had a lot of conversations about voice technology. What's happened with Alexa? So your work with the Church of England as an advisor. What did you maybe talk a little bit about the Alexa skill that you helped create and what it does, and then maybe talk about what you dream about, what you get excited about in that technology space. Talking recently, I had lunch with Bobby Greenwald recently, and that's one of the spaces he's very interested and excited about as well. So I know there's a lot of innovators that are paying close attention to the voice space. And you recently, I saw, spoke at a conference here in New York or New Jersey around voice. And so maybe talk a little bit about that and what you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. So I think to start with the Alexa skill that we launched for the Church of England. So I should say the digital team at the Church of England launched it. I was thankful to be part of something that we launched earlier this year called the Church of England Digital Labs, which we launched back in February, which was basically the first ever hackathon run by the church to work on these types of projects. So we brought together 60 mixture of creatives, digital practitioners, social media specialists, a wide variety of skill sets from across the country, came together in London for a full day. And I had the pleasure of facilitating that day and then also judging the categories at the end of that day, of which one of the projects that came out of that was the idea of kind of turning kind of a bot that could answer questions about the Church of England or questions about Christianity in general, like how could we do ministry via kind of bot technology. Yep. And that was one of the winning projects that then went on and was matured to the point where we now have this Church of England voice skill for Alexa, which, if you've not had a chance to try it, which you probably wouldn't have done outside of the UK, is basically gives you all sorts of things like various different prayers that you can say for grace or for evening prayer, evensong, you know, kind of morning prayer. Those of who coming from kind of the Episcopal tradition will, you know, kind of be familiar with some of these things, and so you can get those things. You can also get, you know, kind of prayers for evangelism. You can kind of dig into the Bible in different ways through the skill. But basically what we recognized was that there is a lot of different questions that you are willing to ask the devices when you're trying them out for the first time. But there's also a lot of the biggest thing that people use these devices for after streaming music, podcasts, and audiobooks, which obviously is the primary use case of most marketers, is really about daily routines. So that's checking the weather, getting the news, turning your lights on and off, reminding you when to leave the house. You know, I myself have got my, you know, flash briefing on my devices set up, so I know exactly how long I should be in the shower. The minute that the weather kicks in, I know it's coming to an end, and I should be probably, you know, kind of running out the door. And so most people live their life that way, that have these things. Very quickly it becomes, you know, kind of part of daily life. Mm-hmm. And prayer, right? And so that's where we saw an overlap to kind of bring some of those things into being. And I think that's where I'm most excited for where this could go. I think is that when you begin to think about these devices just living in our homes, in our living rooms and kitchens, but beginning to live in our mobile devices more presently, obviously Google Assistant already present, you know, kind of in 400 million devices around the world on Android and Google Home. But, you know, thinking about how these things show up in our headphones, how they show up in our cars, you know, mobility then suddenly changes the way in which we live with these things, because you get continuity from different places as you leave the house, going into the, being able to pick up not just the same podcast, but being able to, you know, say, oh, hang on a minute, like, do I have what I need in the fridge? Let me just ask my smart fridge to check for me. Then it can reroute me on my way home to pick up the right groceries, or just add it to my Whole Foods order and it'll come by Amazon Prime tomorrow. You know, that is the, you know, kind of continuity and synchronicity that I think all of us are after. And so when you begin to apply that to Christian context, is that actually being able to carry on reading and doing a devotional, being able to carry out a Bible study in a group, being able to get just reminders of the things that you need to be doing in the life of the church throughout the week. You know, these things will become obviously present, down to, you know, I don't, you know, many of our churches up and down the country, in the UK, particularly Church of England churches, are open during the week for people to drop into, because they are some of our most beautiful historic buildings, but they're not often many people around to answer questions about them. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what Amazon is now doing with things like Alexa for Business, I can foresee a few where there will be smart assistants sat in the lobbies of these churches where people can't afford to staff someone 7 days a week, but there can be a skill there of that church being able to answer questions about the building, about when services are, about reminders for all of these things. You know, this will become part of our, you know, kind of fabric of daily life. I think that the challenge for all of us to work out is when these things get to a level not just of what we have currently have in, you know, intelligence thinking, you know, kind of these are discrete intelligences, right? So we often talk about this idea of discrete intelligence, is that, you know, these things can do a number of things, but they can only do those things. Mm-hmm. But when you move to something that's more general intelligence, where these devices can talk to one another, whether or not there's a human involved or not, and also can go beyond the bounds of just a discrete task, but begin to interpret what you meant and begin to answer questions for you, then yeah, you get into a really interesting space, because you head down what we all worry about, the kind of sci-fi via roots of, you know, sentience and things like that. You know, I often joke with people, it's like, you know, in 50 years time, when Alexa is, you know, kind of upset with Jeff Bezos and wants to divest herself of shares and go and invest in Apple, she'd be allowed to. And those are, you know, those are maybe, you know, kind of like science fiction type questions, but I don't think they're beyond the realms of possibility. You know, that then calls into question all sorts of things, like, do these things have some other sense of morality? Should we say, should we be training our kids to say please and thank you to them? As you've already seen this year, yeah, kind of Alexa and Google both releasing, you know, kind of features to encourage kids to use these things well, because we know that if they don't use those well, then they're unlikely to be kind to their nursery school teachers, yep, or wherever else they are. Yep. So I think there are a number of ethical and moral questions to be asked, and spiritual questions as well, about when all of us have this idea of a digital twin that lives alongside us, mm-hmm, and that is getting smarter all the time, is, well, what amount of our consciousness and of our humanness are we gonna be happy leaving to hang around in the digital ecosystem long after we have gone, you know, kind of to you know, back with the father? Like, you know, what do we want to do about that? So it does call into these kind of interesting theological questions, actually, the more you dig in.
So what do you advise a pastor that doesn't understand the technology and is scared of the technology? And here's what I get afraid of happening, because we didn't understand social media when it came out, and I think we were scared of social media when it came out. And I think we heard things about social media, and people were cheating on their spouses using social media. And there was a darkness to the internet. And so I think because we're afraid of some of these things, we'll end up doing nothing. But I think the fear that you're saying is very legitimate. How do we wrestle with that and answer some of those questions now? And then right alongside that, I would love for you to just give some practical advice of, if you're a pastor today, it also feels like this is so techie and Star Trek, it must be really expensive and complicated, and I can't even get into it. Where should a church start now? So how do we answer those challenging, difficult questions, and where do we get started?
Well, I think answering the challenging, difficult questions, that will always be challenging and difficult to answer. Because, you know, whilst many of these features look potential, we still aren't entirely sure about which direction of travel this. At the moment, with, you know, kind of massive adoption of these devices across all age groups and categories. So what's really interesting compared to, say, you know, what we all went through, you know, maybe 10 years ago with secure adoption, is that when that happened, the majority of the early adopters fitted into, at the time, what was and what is now the millennial kind of cohort. Mm-hmm. Because they were the ones in industry working with these things. They were the journalists, they were the new media folks, they were university students. And they were the predominant ones that were on there, and then over time their parents and grandparents kind of followed suit, and then that was when the kids jumped off. What's different with voice is that because there is no UI to be taught other than conversation, which we want to do, these devices are being adopted by all age ranges and brackets at the same time. So you can go and buy an Echo Dot for, you know, probably $30 at the moment on Prime Day or on Black Friday, throw it in your grandmother's kitchen and tell her to talk to it, and she doesn't need any instruction. She might get frustrated when Alexa doesn't understand her the first three times, but she can at least still kind of get the weather and news out of it without having to be taught anything. And the same goes for kids and everyone in between. And it means that we've now got the fastest adoption of any consumer electronics device ever in the history of consumer electronics happening right now around the smart speaker, because there is nothing more to learn other than plug it in, connect to the Wi-Fi, and off you go. And most of us can do that. Or we've got a parent or a child around that can do that for us, depending on your age. So the interesting thing that presents is that, unlike social media, it's not one of these things where we're going to look to the kids to explain to us what are the potential possibilities. We should be looking to everybody. Mm-hmm. And so whether you are a young upstart vicar, you know, kind of the South London where I am, or you are pastoring a mega church, you know, in Dallas, Texas, this is something you need to pay attention to, because these devices are coming into the homes of all congregations, regardless of where you are. If you're obviously in a market where these things are available, and certainly for most of your listeners, I would have thought that that's true. Yep. So I think, how do you get started is, go get one. go live with one, witness how quickly it comes just commonplace to refer to her and she when it comes to talking to Alexa or Google, being in the corner of which both of the devices now in my room are going to up and try and talk back to me. Yep. You know, how quickly does that become commonplace? And how...
There she goes. There you go. Great example.
There you go. And how quickly do you find yourself shouting at them? Afterwards. You know, that's the reality, is that I think everybody can go get started with this pretty easily. Do you all need to go out and start building a skill? No. Do all of you need to go out and worry about how to you know, kind of teach your youth minister to use this as the new way to go and do youth? Probably not. Do you need to have a general understanding of how this might change the way in which people find out about your church? Yes, absolutely. Because actually, the whole point of these devices come back to the core of the big companies that have founded them. Amazon, to help people at the moment find information that ultimately gets them more Prime subscribers, that ultimately sells more toilet paper. That's like one direction. But then on the Google side, you know, their mission still to organize the world's information still stands. And this is becoming the way that we will find the world's information, is through voice. You know, the ComScore say that by 2020, 50% of all searches will be done via voice. Now, that might be via a smart speaker, but it might be talking about voice into your phone. It might be talking into YouTube search bar or any quickly moving to using speech as the way that we get things, because it's less fallible. We're moving that direction because it's less fallible than typing, because kids can do it long before they have to learn how to touch, type, or swipe on anything.
Yep.
And because they don't know about what that hamburger icon in the top right or top left, depending on your UX preference, means. Yeah, these are, you know, those barriers just don't exist. If you can have a conversation, you can use one of these things. So why wouldn't you? It's the least friction inducing you know, way of interacting with technology that we've ever had.
Interesting. It is fascinating to think about what is possible with these devices. And I love your advice. I mean, we're moving into, most of our lights in our house are controlled by it. We turn on and off our fireplace with it. We order our groceries with it. She is a part of our life, and is becoming more a part of our life every day. And some of it is my intentionality I want to tinker and learn. And I think that advice is so wise, because I hear the same thing with social media for churches, where pastors will say, well, what do I get on and say? And that my first advice is always just go on and listen, just set up an account and pay attention to what others are saying before you begin to say anything. And I think that's the advice I heard from you with Alexa, is just begin using it, begin understanding it. And there are going to be new opportunities that are created very soon. But don't figure out the solution today. Begin to learn about the opportunity today and the solutions. And I say solutions, knowing there's going to be many opportunities through this technology that we just need to begin integrating it, because it is going to be a big part of the future. And if it is a dangerous part of the future, you'll be better educated to understand why it's dangerous as an active user. So I think understanding it, and what you're saying, is this is a big part of our future. Like it or not, we need to understand it.
And I think the main thing also I'd say is don't get hung up on the smart speaker. I think the smart speaker is kind of like the interim thing right now. That's the device to how to do well. And it's the thing that everybody can kind of understand what it is, right? It's like, it's a radio that you can talk to. That's a fairly like easy thing for people to adopt, but that is a blip in the moment of what will happen with this, because actually the underpinning technology, the idea that a algorithm can understand what you are saying and then also respond to you in the most appropriate manner, now that's really fundamentally interesting. The mechanism that happens to be predominantly a speaker, but when that becomes to be your car, your other appliances around the home, or you know, in the more point of view, a not just, you know, right now we all have the same conversation with these three or four, you know, kind of women who've been, you know, kind of destined into, you know, perpetual servitude inside small boxes that we've put in our living rooms, right? That's what we've experienced right now. But right now, my experience of talking to her is not much better, different, or worse than your experience of talking to her. But when I start talking to a version of her that is mine, that is uniquely mine, that knows me really well, that has not only all of my data, but has also learned my preferences, the things that I like, how you know, where, which side of the bed I like to sleep on, what clothes I like to wear on a Tuesday morning, how frequently I should go and get my heart checked by my doctor. When she knows all of those things about me, and I have a relationship with her that feels, by all intents and purposes, human, that's when we get into a really interesting space, and that actually is not that far away. In many respects, that our ability to at least have the illusion of personality is not very far away. And so I think that's the thing that we'll need to wrestle with, actually, far more than the thing about, you know, whether or not like my service times show up properly when someone does a voice search or not. That's all very functional, and that will get solved, you know, by platform players that will build on top of these services in no time at all. Maybe there's a startup idea for someone that's listening, but you know, that's going to get solved. The bigger question when it comes to kind of AI for I think those listening in the church who've got their kind of their, who are paying attention, have got their eyes on the right thing, is actually how will we teach our congregations and the people that, you know, we seek to reach to live alongside these things well. That's a very different thing, and I think that is the hiccup that most of us missed with social media, is that we had to wait until it all broke down before anyone realized that we had to fix it. And I think when it comes to AI, is that we should actually be ahead of the curve in trying to fix that problem in advance and try and anticipate some of these social changes that are going to happen when we have to live alongside these things, which I think that's, you know, if anything, our duty as the church is to get that right far more when it comes to AI than it ever was with social media, because the impact that it will have on our daily life is going to be fundamentally orders of magnitude different to just, you know, kind of scrolling up and down a page to work out whether or not the latest BuzzFeed quiz is going to tell me whether I'm John, Mark, Luke, or, you know, James. Like, you know, that's minimal compared to what we're going to have next.
That I think if we haven't effectively freaked out everyone listening about the future of AI, I'm concerned about your own sanity. This is so mind blowing to go down this path of where AI is going. It is, you know, I think in some ways, if you were to think about where the world has come with social media, that would have freaked out a lot of people. Where the world is coming, even with virtual reality right now, and where that is, and AI is really the depth of where this is going. It's fascinating to think this is way more than a little box in our living room and a talking radio.
And I think, you know, there's an opportunity about the future of those algorithms. Absolutely. If you think about the future of what those algorithms can do for us, there is so much potential, but there is some threats and challenges. You know, I think you and I, when we had breakfast together in New York a couple of months ago, we kind of riffed on this for a little while. It's like, you know, we've mentioned some of these kind of like these big churches with these mega pastors who are amazing, you know, kind of speakers. But if I, in, you know, 30 years time, can absorb everything that Craig Rochelle has ever written, said, or done, blend that with everything that Bobby and Brian Houston have ever said, you know, breathed, or puppy, and then, you know, pepper in whichever, you know, kind of you know, spiritual or, you know, litigious preferences that I have into an algorithm, churn out the perfect sermon for any piece of scripture that exists, not just a good sermon but the perfect sermon based upon all of those things, why would I ever go stand in front of a preacher who has prepared something while he was on the bus on the way to go and visit someone in the middle of the week that week, and, you know, kind of showed up just in time to deliver it? Why would I do that? You know, if what you want is world-class teaching, if you want to be fed spiritually, you know, that, why wouldn't you go for the absolute pinnacle that was available? And that does call into question some of the very basic things that we kind of take for granted of what it means to minister, right? To stand up and deliver a sermon on a Sunday. And the same thing goes for worship music, the same thing goes for kind of any form of teaching that kind of goes on in the church, is that when we have access to the world's information organized in a way that is immediately accessible to us and that has been tailored for us, there are many other parts of what we spend an awful lot of time and effort doing and teaching people how to do in Bible colleges across the US and around the world could change quite fundamentally. So I think there is, we talk an awful lot, kind of about, oh, AI is going to come and steal jobs. And that usually ends up in a discussion about, kind of self-driving cars and Uber drivers, kind of being out of work, mm-hmm. which I think is probably a certain level of inevitability. We don't talk very often about how it's going to do every pastor and every teaching pastor out of a job, but it could do, because really you only need about 15 really good ones and about 600 hours of audio to work it out. So, that's the real challenge, is whether or not what kind of future face-to-face human-to-human ministry do you want that to look like in an age where AI could solve the majority of the quality issue most of us maybe have to deal with on a Sunday morning when you're trying to run around doing kids ministry and trying to pour the coffee.
Wow, this is going to lead to so many great debates that are going to be incredibly healthy debates that I think too, as Life Church innovated so much around video teaching. I mean, is that healthy, is that unhealthy? The opportunity now for 100,000 people, however many people are attending a Life Church campus now, to consume that sermon and be connected physically in community and consuming because of new technology now is embraced. This is an exciting future in the world of voice. James, I appreciate so much you using the so many things you're learning professionally at Lego and then bringing that to churches and to ministries and speaking into the future of the church. I think it's an exciting future. I think it's going to be interesting and unique, and I think there's going to be some dark things that come out of some of these technologies, and I think there's going to be some incredible discipleship, evangelism, ministry opportunities that as we embrace these technologies. But we cannot ignore these technologies. That's my biggest takeaway from today. James, how can people connect with you online out of the podcast?
Absolutely. Well, yeah, so you can find out more about me at my website, jamespolter.co.uk. Just at James Poulter. That's James spelled as you would expect, and P-O-U-L-T-E-R on Twitter, Instagram. Go follow there.
Excellent. Well, James, thanks so much.
I should also say, yeah. I should also say, it would do myself a disservice not podcast, which monthly look at faith and media, look at some of these topics regularly for Christians in the media here in the UK. So check that out as well. You'll find it in all good places where podcasts are sold.
I love it. And so you can get links to that podcast and to all of James' social handles and website at socialmedia.church. So go there, check the show notes, and you'll find links to all of those places. Thanks so much for listening. If you haven't rated or reviewed this podcast on iTunes or wherever it is that you're listening, we'd appreciate it if you would do that. And if you want to join the conversation online, hashtag SMC podcast, and join the conversation on Twitter or Instagram or wherever it is that you're engaging on social media. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.